are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay first aired on October 18th, 1990.
There was no real sunny period last Saturday, but the clouds did thin and the rain dropped off enough for a small group to take a brief walk along the trails at Rice Creek, especially the part of the Willow Trail that skirts the edge of Rice Pond. It was an enjoyable ramble. There were waterfowls, several hundred, including 8 species of ducks, Canada geese, and pied-billed grebes, resting, feeding, and occasionally essaying brief aerial constitutionals. We didn't dwell on what they were doing, even though they were vocal and active. The basic quacks of hen mallards and black ducks blended in with the atonal chucks and nasal coughs of other species. With waterfowl, the female voice is the dominant one. The male voices are more varied and less strident. Peterson employs the following descriptive terms when referring to male calls: croak, yeeb, quack, crack, took, peep, whistle. Adjectives include low, meaning soft, and light, meaning high and difficult to hear, frog-like and whistled. These are sounds we don't usually associate with waterfowl, but they all appear to be meaningful. The effect of the interlacing of sounds is like an atonal symphony by a group of musicians who have temporarily laid aside their instruments to ad lib on the score, heeding only the rhythm. As one who is constantly emphasizing the organismal or ensemble quality of interacting populations, it's not difficult to find an orchestral quality in this free-form performance. How much the presence of one species affects the performance of another may not be clear, but it is not at all difficult to observe the interaction within the species. Drakes, mostly resplendent in newly acquired nuptial plumage, are intermittently displaying for each other in what appears to be lighthearted competition. At the same time, they perform for the females in what is clearly a precursor to serious sexual activity as spring approaches. The females are at best marginally interested, but they often employ mild enticement when the males break off the performance. Most prominent here are the small group flights, usually several males and one or two females. This competition becomes increasingly directed and intense as the season wears on. This has led one observer to remark that waterfowl spend 3 months in nesting and rearing their young, 2 months in molding, and the rest of the year debating and rehearsing for the next nesting season. These speculations were not the principal thrust of the evening pond watch last Saturday. Rather, we dwelt briefly on identifying a few of the colorful males. The Drake American Widgeon, or baldpate, wears an ensemble of green, warm brownish-gray flesh color and black, liberally accented with white. The pintail is a slim bird of chocolate, gray, black, and white. It is one of the only two marshland ducks with a white breast. The other one with the white breast, the shoveler or spoonbill, has chestnut flanks, an iridescent green head, gray-brown back, and prominent chalky blue shoulders. Its enormous bill is its most prominent feature. The wood duck is a symphony of blues, greens, chestnut, red, yellow, and white. With its crest and its dapper air, it is the Beau Brummel of duckdom. The tiny teal are also in trim attire. The blue-winged drake has a prominent white crescent wedged between eye and bill, setting off the strange gray-blue pink of its head. Mottled ecru flame flanks and breast, gray-brown back and black rump with thick white crescent just in front of the tail complete the ensemble. In flight, it shows a chalky blue shoulders, for which it is named. In flight, the green-winged teal shows no prominent markings. It looks like a dark gray missile. On a sunny day, as it rests on the water, the chestnut head with broad green band extending from eye to the base of its modest crest, gray body, flesh-colored spotted breast, an occasional glints of green on the wing are quite pleasing. Look for a short white bar just in front of the flank and yellowish white under tail coverts. Some people have wondered about the fence we have installed on either side of the building at Rice Creek. Last Saturday, its value was demonstrated. The waterfowl, no longer intimidated by people and cars with slamming doors, hang in much closer to the building now. There is no danger of a group of visitors intruding on the scene by wandering down along the water's edge, flushing the ducks or driving them back from the windows. Shortly after 5, as dust settled over the shimmering pond, ducks, geese, and muskrats moved right over in front of the building, apparently unaware that we were still watching from the darkened windows. I'm not sure which was more impressive, the convergence of the ducks or the sight of 5 muskrats busily feeding, diving, and preening just 30 feet from where we stood. It was a very rewarding 2.5 hours. Too bad you missed it. That's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.